Today's episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra. Are you happy because you win, or do you win because you're happy? At only 2.6 carbs and 95 calories, it's only worth it if you enjoy it. Stay tuned for the Ultra Player of the Week coming up later on in today's episode. Okay, we got a great one for you. Obviously, we come in off of the Brooklyn Nets victory over the Indiana Pacers. We don't really get a chance. Caris LeVert is on the court. He looks good, but there's so much more to break down on the Brooklyn side of things. Obviously, we dive in on the early struggles for this team, the sloppy play really on both sides, physical, rest, let it happen. And then from there, we start to think about what decisions did Nash make from a rotation standpoint to start this game? And how did he adapt and move away from it once he saw the way the game flow was trending? Ultimately, we find ourselves right back in the fourth quarter. Big performance from James Harden. Big performance from Nicholas Claxton. And this really, again, continues to be the building blocks of a Brooklyn Nets team that is identifying grit, hustle. These keywords you're going to hear all episode long from Doug and myself. It's the kind of thing, if you're a true Brooklyn Nets fan, you love to see this as we work our way through the season. We dive into all that, of course, and also highlight the locker room feature that we really enjoyed with you, the fans. But before we do, the theme music.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
On Nets podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network, your team. You know it's every day. I'm Doug Norrie, owner, operator, DFSR.com. Got you covered everything you need from a DFS standpoint, FanDuel and DraftKings, NBA, MLB right around the corner, NFL, that season will eventually come back. All there for you on DFSR.com. And over there is Adam Armbrecht, voice of the Brooklyn Nets on Sportscaster, host of the One Giant podcast covering the New York Giants. This guy's got New York covered, buddy. How we doing?
It's another day and another win. I feel good. I feel excited. We got to see a familiar face in Caris LeVert. And we also kicked off a little bit of a new feature for the podcast that we're excited about. So I'm humming right now, buddy.
Yeah, buddy. We're coming off 30 plus minutes over there on the Locker Room app. If you're not on Locker Room right now, take it from a guy who's been using it for about 10 minutes, me, that loves this app already. I'm being serious. I use it. I'm kidding around because I use it a lot this week, leading into our Locker Room thing for that we did after the game. You got to get on Locker Room. We had Hassan on there, Tony on there, a bunch of fans that were jumping on. It's almost like call-in style, answering questions about the game, doing some conversations around Nets stuff. It was actually a really cool way to just kind of debrief the game before we jumped onto the podcast, because we did end up recording and we thought we were going to use it for a segment, but ended up thought we'd probably get a little bit more linear flow for the podcast listener by just recording another one. But that's what we do, buddy. We kibitz with our people out there, you know, making sure that we're talking Nets with the fans like we are, and then we can do the podcast afterwards. So definitely jump onto Locker Room, the Locker Room app, download it. We'll be back on next week there as well. But obviously the real story here, the Brooklyn Nets win a game where they were down 18 and they won going away. And it's just this team, they're simultaneously a superstar team, but they have like a version of themselves, and it's usually when all the other superstars sit in Harden plays, where they're like the scrappy team too, right? Like this is a championship level caliber team, 100%. This is probably right now, when they're on full throttle, the team to beat in the NBA. But they have this version of themselves, and we saw it tonight, which is like the, hey, our backs are against the wall. We really shouldn't be winning. We're throwing out a bunch of weird lineups, and we also win. And I feel like it's almost like if you're a Nets fan, it's almost like the perfect scenario for this team, because you get like that Brooklyn, you get the Brooklyn grit piece of it, while also knowing that you have superstar level, championship level team. Like, it's almost like we're having our cake and eating it too. And I felt this game was a perfect example of that. Kyrie sits, obviously. Kevin Durant's not playing. And it's James Harden and like a bunch of role players and young guys who kind of take it upon themselves to say, hey, we're the underdog here. We shouldn't really be in this game. We're going to fall down. We're going to claw ourselves back. And I think we're actually at the precipice of a team with championship level talent, like I said, and sort of championship level grit. and like an underdog mentality to them.
Oh, yeah.
And there's other pieces about this. And it's all of a sudden, and when you get these pieces mashed up together, you're really on the verge of something special.
And we're going to get into the kind of the flow of the game here and the highlight pieces, a lot of the players, a lot of young guys contributing, like you said, as well. But what I liked about this one, and you're 100% right on this combination of identity for Brooklyn, is, we, you know, this was a theme for a while. Nets played down to the competition. There's a sloppy game to start here. I don't think they were playing down to it, but this had more of a vibe, and you've seen this more consistently now, where they go, all right, come on now, knock it off here. We're going to prove a point in the second half of this game that we're just better than you. And you say, you don't have Kyrie in this one as well. We know KD was injured. And you could make the case, okay, are your role players, Brooklyn, really going to be able to stand up to a Pacers team with Sabonis and Turner and obviously Caris LeVert as well? And you kind of also, for the most part, we'll get into one guy that's having some issues, but for the most part, it's also like, yeah, and by the way, that mentality, it does come from Harden, it feels like, in a lot of ways, but then all the role players know, like, this is what we are for this team. This is what we need to be. So the entire collection of role players and bench players for Brooklyn is exactly what you've always gotten from them over the last handful of years. Then you just throw the layer of superstar talent on top of it, and that's what you get excited about playoff time. But as far as regular season goes, I love that we've seen this over the last couple of weeks, last 2-3 weeks, where that, like you said, grit, hustle, all those dirty kind of plays. And I mean, dirty as in get down on the floor and win those loose balls and, you know, really a hustle plays. It's been great to see that identity reemerge for Brooklyn, because that's important. That's important for playoff basketball, and it looks like they're finding that piece of the rhythm as well.
It's really where we are right now. It's really kind of, like I said, we're bordering on something special. You need to have moments during the season where your back is up against the wall, where it's difficult, where you're getting role players into situations where the pressure is on. We checked all the boxes in this. You need situations where the coaching staff needs to make functional changes to get things to work. Okay, we're going to talk about that. That definitely happened in this game. You're going to need to have the superstar sort of be able to carry groups of other guys that maybe kind of like are, you know, playing above their heads a little bit. They're maybe not supposed to be in these roles. They're not supposed to be closing these big games, right? They're not supposed to be leading comebacks. And they got that as well. Like, they just got so, like, this game exemplified a lot of different things that are really, really exciting about the Nets right now. And this easily could have been a very frustrating game, right? And once again, by the way, for fans out there, Adam yeah. does it again, folks. Because Adam, I mean, partway through the second quarter, you sent me a text that was, I should have had this up already, but it was something like, Kyrie's sitting out, they're getting blown out, this locker room's going to be a mess. And then basically from that point on, it was all Nets. Again, it's unbelievable how you can do this. Last game it was, let's record early because the game's over, they're blowing them out. This time it's, you know, oh, this is just such a disaster. You know, maybe we should just make a new rule where you just let the game play out. Although in situations like this, it was good that you did say something, because it definitely, you know, swung the universe. Again, like we said this before, like a butterfly flaps its wings and a hurricane happens, a half a world away. That is the situation that's going on with your text at this point when it comes to the game. But
let's be clear. I've provided now a sample size. Like, let's make it official. My thumbs have power. So now it's about, how do I choose to use that power? I'm going to be very selective going forward. I'm going to hone it in. And yes, unfortunately, I'm going to have to commit to making negative statements out loud about the Brooklyn Nets, and you're going to see the results on the court. So don't worry, friends. I've refined my methods. This is going to be a lot of fun down the stretch.
Okay, so anyway, so getting back to what I was saying about this team and where we are on just a just kind of like a story level, right? If we're telling a story yeah. about this team, and every game is its own story, and every game kind of adds to the story and takes away from it, or it all becomes a chapter in what the season's going to be like. The fact that things have been difficult at times, and they've already sort of dealt with, you know, fall adversity. I mean, real life adversity is different than basketball adversity. So I don't want to mash those two things up. But they've dealt with now with basketball adversity, right? Injuries, new players, trying to onboarding new talents, working in new schemes, right? New coaching staff. They're covering a lot of the bases early about what can be difficult about an entire season, and kind of almost every step of the way. Especially recently, basically since the trade, since the Detroit game, the first Detroit game, basically since then, it's been all these different little things that are happening, and yet the outcomes continue to be the same, which are wins. And I, you know, sometimes you could just, you could say to yourself, oh, well, you know, if it keeps being, you know, people said this about the Clippers last year. It's like, oh, they had dealt with all these injuries and stuff like that. But yeah, once it's time to go, they'll be ready to go. And then we saw that it wasn't, that wasn't the case come playoff time, right? I don't have the same sense with this Nets team right now. I have a sense of they're just finding ways to figure out how to win, even when it looks like they have no business doing it. And I hate to keep harping on this one theme, but that's that is my new theme with this Nets team is you have the pieces keep changing. The news keeps kind of not always being great, injuries and, you know, who's playing, who's not. Sometimes the stuff doesn't work out early, but in the end, they just continue to find ways to win. It's so freaking exciting.
And I love it too, because I know the whoops have come out for you a handful of times over the last game. So I know that you're now starting to lean into this team and getting, I don't say swept up in, right? But just getting excited about it. And this style of play is important, even when you have that super, because I think these elements are crucial in the big picture of winning a championship. So you need, and what do we say? Go back, remember, because now we're on this massive, mostly win streak shy of the Mavericks game there, mixed in there. But we said, all I wanted to see down the stretch, we still need to see KD get out there, but all I wanted to see was confirm to me that all the pieces can work and the supporting cast and everything else. And that's exactly what this run has been about. And you now just get to push the pause button and say, the last piece is KD, the last piece is his health, and everything else. Like, I'm pretty close to checking most boxes, and we haven't even got into a Blake Griffin sample and what that could look like as well.
All right, we're going to get to this rest of this game in a second. We made it this far without even mentioning James Harden yet, which feels absolutely bonkers that he dropped 40 points, 15 assists, and 10 rebounds in a win, and we made it through the first 10 minutes or so of the game, of the podcast, without even mentioning him. But that's just what the case when you have James Harden on your team. You can kind of end up sort of just forgetting how great he is and how he just puts the team on his back again. And again, we just see this again, time after time with him, and he's just a totally rejuvenated player playing with all kinds of joy. There's happiness there. There's all this stuff that we weren't seeing in Houston. He came to Brooklyn. It's all happening for him now, and that's why he is got to be the Ultra Player of the Week. Michelob Ultra, it's only worth it if you enjoy it. 2.5 carbs, 95 calories. Joy creates success, and we're seeing that with James Harden on the court right now. Enjoyment isn't just the end game, it's the whole game. So right now, know this, when you're drinking Michelob Ultra, are you happy because you win, or do you win because you're happy? James Harden, Michelob Ultra Player of the Week. And got to talk to you about our friends over at Bet Online. What a time of year it is right now. We are on the precipice of March Madness, where it's just brackets all the time. Obviously, NBA rolling every night as well. Just if you're a basketball fan, from big to small, this is the absolute best time of year to get in on the action. And Bet Online has you fully covered for all of your betting needs. Maybe you're not into basketball. I can't even believe that if you're listening to the podcast, but maybe you're into other things besides it. They got the awards season covered as well. TV shows, reality TV. It's all there for you on Bet Online. Real time updated odds and props on every single thing you can imagine. Plus, they have news and scores. So it's really your one-stop shop for everything you need betting. If you head over to Bet Online right now, you sign up for an account. You can do that for free, but if you make a deposit, you're going to get a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Got to use the promo code LOCKEDON though. So you're going to get, go sign up, make that deposit, 50% welcome bonus. Got to use the promo code LOCKEDON like our podcast network, Bet Online, your online sportsbook experts.
All right, so as we now turn our attention to what the game flow looked like, we mentioned big performance from James Harden, and just before we do dive fully in on it, Wilt Chamberlain, Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, and James Harden, you know what they have in common? Only players in NBA history with 140-point performances, and the win over the Pacers brought another one for James Harden. And even in that, didn't start out the way you wanted it to. It didn't feel like it. We were on our way to a 40-point performance and a 124-115 kind of just bleeding out the clock at the end of it here to get the W. First quarter action, the Nets get outscored 40 points to given up to the Pacers here to 25. So you're down 15 at the end of the first quarter. Sloppy play is really the theme here early for Brooklyn and how they get into this early hole.
Yeah, this game really started poorly. So obviously the Nets are without Kyrie Irving, obviously without Durant. We're going to get into the Durant injury, and we keep pushing this one down. Maybe it's because I'm worried about talking about it. So maybe that's where we are with the Durant thing. We'll see. But obviously Kyrie has to sit out this game, probably more of a load management thing than anything else. And they start Bruce Brown in his place. Don't get no Jeff Green. A little surprised by that. And this game starts off really, really poorly for the Nets. They were having trouble. So it starts off poorly in results, but I don't think it started off poorly in execution, if that makes sense. Like, I think they were actually getting a lot of what they wanted from the game flow against the Pacers. They just weren't able to finish on it, right? Like, they were getting these Bruce Brown short rolls. They were getting DeAndre to the basket, and to the point where it was a situation where I think that, like, that was basically what they wanted to do, right? Like, they're getting doubles on Harden, yep, and they're getting out of the switch, and they're getting those blitzes to the basket. And Bruce Brown just really wasn't finishing them near the rim. Like, he kind of, you know, Matt Brooks came on last Sunday and talked about how these Bruce Brown, when he's going to be paired up with DeAndre, is going to be kind of problematic at times, because if DeAndre is going to sit in the dunker spot, then Bruce Brown's finishes at the rim are going to go from layups to floaters. Nice job by him. That's exactly what happened here, right? Like, now yeah. Bruce Brown probably should have still finished on a decent amount of these and still wasn't able to, but it really did exemplify sort of the X's and O's issue of what happens when those little things aren't working. So the sloppy, and it was still a little bit sloppy, right? But that was what I saw. I was like, oh, the Nets are kind of getting what they want here, but it's just not going in the end, right? And they end up falling down. Now, look, should DeAndre have played 12 minutes in the first quarter? I found to be a little bit weird. But, you know, if you look back to the last time they played the Pacers, we thought that was his best game of the season, if you remember, like when he was able to front Sabonis a lot. So I thought execution-wise, they were doing the things they wanted to do. It just wasn't working when it came to the final touch, which was getting the ball in the basket.
Yeah, and that's why I think it's misleading when you see the lineup come out. Now, I can make the case. You talk about Harris, Jordan, Harden, Shamet, and Brown. That was surprising. But it doesn't mean that it wasn't the right lineup. It just means that when things don't fall, it starts to get confusing. When you don't get the results you expect from Jordan a second time around, it starts to look bad. Now, the difference ends up being for me as well, because Shamet, as we've been complimentary of him, I thought he still had a nice game in this in spite of going 1-5 from the field. He has shown me the ability, I think, to impact things on the defensive end. Now, not in the same way that a Bruce Brown does, but I do like his effort and his energy. We can think about the plus minus from the starting rotation into the second unit. The only thing, as you said there, 12 minutes, the entire first quarter seems like a bit much, especially because of recent sample size, and then starting to get into the second quarter, the comeback run is, again, when you start to see more Jeff Green, you start to see Nicholas Claxton, even Tyler Johnson, who continues to be impressive when he gets his minute shares. I don't know, as you say, chicken or the egg here about what could have or should have been. If some of those looks that normally have been going down for Bruce Brown work, then this game looks a lot different coming out of the first quarter, and we probably don't even really think about it beyond saying turnovers were a big factor, and that sloppy play is what let the Pacers get out and run a little bit and get some easy looks.
For sure. And just so you know, so we're clear, turnovers were, this game, especially early, was sloppy on both sides. It wasn't like, for as sloppy as the Nets were playing, the fact that they were even still in the game was a testament to the Pacers' sloppiness as well and lack of execution, right? Like, this game, how bad the Nets weren't able to convert and, you know, were able to just turn the ball over, missing free throws. I mean, just it was kind of all going wrong early in the game. The fact that the Pacers weren't able to definitively pull this one away was a testament to their own sloppiness, because they didn't really play all that crisply either. It was just kind of a rock fight at times, right? It was like the game was very physical. I thought there was a lot of no calls both sides. I don't think the refereeing favored one side or the other. I just thought there was tons of contact at times that wasn't getting called across the board. And that was just kind of the feel of this game. And yeah, it was just one of these things early that just looked completely out of sync at times. And then when you get into the second quarter, I'm going to spend 2 seconds on this. TLC is not going to see the court here for the foreseeable future, so I don't think we need to spend tons of time on this, but his 7 minutes were as bad as you can ever play 7 minutes. It was just crazy. So that kind of lent to it too. But you said the plus minus for especially the starters. It got a little bit better in the second half for some of these guys, but not really. DJ ends up a cool minus 16. Bruce Brown ends up a minus 12. And that's what happens. You know, again, some of those things aren't working, but credit to Steve Nash and company, because they made changes here that ended up winning them the game, that got away from those core those pieces that they started with. And that's a really hard thing for coaches sometimes to do, to get away from the original plan and to move into something that's more functional and actually working. I mean, maybe in this case, it was so obvious that anybody would have done it, right? Like, it was so obvious what was working and what wasn't. But sometimes for coaches, it's not that obvious even when it is, right? And the fact that that it was kind of all going wrong, they were down 18, and really from, like you said, like we said before, from the time you texted me is when they started turning it around. But they kind of end up making those changes, and I'm wondering if we end up seeing fewer and fewer. I mean, we saw almost no Bruce Brown minutes last game, and I wonder if, like, the kind of if the short stuff's not going to go down either. I'm wondering if this is kind of is starting to spell the end of this particular rotation for him, right? Like, is the play of the other guys, who we'll get to in a second, if the play of these other role players been so much definitively better that we maybe caught lightning in the Bruce Brown bottle for a little bit here, and I don't know, the clock striking, to mix up a bunch of metaphors here, the clock striking midnight on, and he's turning into, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, I wonder if it's just been sort of, you know, solved at this point, and maybe we're just going to see, maybe there's just going to be more guys in the mix, and we're just not going to rely on this one specific type of game that he had been playing.
Well, and oddly enough, I mean, listen, his final line, 3 of 10, obviously nothing to write home about, but 5 of 6 from the line, got there a little bit, gave you 4 rebounds and assist a couple steals. Like, he still ended up giving you a pretty solid line, even fronted Turner in the lane a couple times and got some touches away. So I think it comes down to, can he get back into a defensive role, specifically in the guard positions? That's where he's going to want to settle back into value. You again, you're not going to be using him at the 5. The last piece, as we worked through the first half of this, was you mentioned Jordan, so you understand from the last sample size to this game, but when you look over at the Pacers and you think Sabonis, you think Turner, I instantly, now, last time you saw this team, you didn't have Claxton available, but it makes sense to want to lean into the Claxton and Green, because they're more athletic, they can move, they can switch better, etc. Claxton showed more of that on the defensive side. So that was, again, if not for the last game, maybe Nash goes to that even quicker. You credit him for making the switch there. And then the other piece was three-point shooting. First half, the Nets were only 5 of 14, and Joe Harris had 4 of those. So, you know, everybody was struggling from the outside. They end up finishing 9 of 27. It was Joe Harris, 5 of 7, carrying that load. We know when the three ball is working for the Nets, that's really what starts to put the grind down on the opposition. And they never found that rhythm in this one really throughout.
That was, this wasn't a crisp game. The Nets scored 124 points. If you were just watching without the scoreboard, you'd be hard pressed to think it was that many. You see the 124 compared to like what you kind of saw taking place at times on the basketball court, it's a crazy testament to like just sort of their offensive firepower at times, because you're like, how in this game where they turned the ball over 18 times turning over, they got to the line 40, made 31, so it's like okay efficiency there. The 3-point shooting 33%, okay, not that great, and yet still got up 124 points in this game. It's like I watched the whole game and I know what the score was, but I'm just saying that if you wrap it all together, especially how they played early, it does feel like a weird number to end up seeing again. And they end up winning by 9, which is again, like also crazy, because I feel like if you watch the game without the scoreboard, also you'd be hard pressed to, unless you watch the body language right at the end, to figure that they were winning this game by that many, because it just looked so bad at times. All right, we're going to get into this end game stuff. I was up off the couch a few times in this one, just because of some loose balls, some offensive rebounds, the stuff that's really kind of plagued them in the past was the thing that ended up turning the tide for them. First, though, I have to talk to you about our friends over at Rock Auto. Rock Auto is the number one place to buy car parts online, or really just anywhere right now, because if you're going into the local place these days getting your car parts, good luck. You're, like I said before in the podcast, you say the part you need, you say the make and model, they disappear into the cavernous expanse of the warehouse in the back. You never know what's coming back up. You never know if it's the right part, if it's the price you want to pay. You know, sometimes they tell you they got to order it themselves. Just save the time on all that stuff with your car parts and just go to Rock Auto. Family owned and run for over 20 years now. They have the easy searchable database when it comes to your car parts. You just type in the make and model and the year, drop-down menus for everything you need. Basically, you're doing the thing that the local place is doing, except you're just doing it in the comfort of your own home and knowing you're getting prices 30 or even 50% better than some of that local stuff. Go over to rockauto.com right now, and all you have to do when they say, "Where'd you hear about us?" just type in "Locked On," name of our podcast network. That will let them know that we sent you over there, and you'll be happy we did. Number one place to buy car parts, rockauto.com. When they say, "How'd you hear about us?" type in "Locked On." Know you're getting the best deal. Know it's the easiest way to search it. Rockauto.com, reliably low prices and all the parts your car will ever need. Rockauto.com. And finally, no better protein bar out there than Built Bar. You know how Built Bar knows that they're the best? You got to love a product when they absolutely know it, right? Because they're like, you can have one that just, you know, is trying to sell you something, or you can just have a product like Built Bar that just knows they're the best, and all they say is, "Yeah, how do you know we're the best?" Well, right now, during March Madness, we're just going to put all of our flavors up in a 64-flavor tournament and have them compete against each other and actually have the decisions be sort of tough, because every single Built Bar is just the absolute best-tasting thing ever. And you're definitely just going to find a flavor you love. And then also know that you're getting an actual healthy protein bar. It's just unbelievable. So Built Bar right now is running Built Bar Madness. The match: Puff Coconut versus Peanut Butter. Buddy, I need you to weigh in. Puff Coconut or Peanut Butter?
You know, when you add the puff in, that's what really pushes me over the line. It's Puff Coconut for me.
Oh my! I think that one's gonna win. Although peanut butter is such a classic flavor that one might take it from the masses. But I think that you're right, because one of the coconuts, the other one that the Locked On people have been just absolutely raving about, and they should be. This stuff's absolutely delicious, healthy for you too. Right now, you go to builtbar.com or built_bar on Twitter. Be part of the Built Bar Madness copy, and remember to use the promo code LOCKED15 to get 15% off your next order at builtbar.com. That's LOCKED15 for 15% off your next order, builtbar.com, and check back to see who won today's matchup and who will become the best tasting protein bar.
And of course, all that March Madness, man, if you're looking for it, we said it before, go ahead and enjoy the Locked On NBA Draft podcast with the scouting reports and all those draft rumors that you're looking for from credentialed experts 4 days a week. Late game, you talked about it. So we work our way through this thing. It's sloppy. It's difficult. It's not what you want it to look like at times. And yet the Nets came out of the break just down 3, made it 2 going to the fourth. And then it really is the fourth quarter where all of those superlatives that you were mentioning at the top of the show start to play themselves out for Brooklyn. And again, in a game that maybe the Nets didn't have anything to prove, they could have tossed this one up to being, who cares? We'll get the next one. They were the hungry team in this. They were the aggressive team. They were the team that was, we couldn't possibly lose this matchup. We need to be 28-13 when this is all said and done, not the Pacers, who could have clawed themselves back to 18-21 and try to fight towards that 500 mark. What really stood out in those sequences that played out to give the Nets ultimately what feels like on paper a comfortable victory with a 9-point edge?
All right, so man, so much stood out here. So much. This fourth quarter was really everything you want when you're rooting for a basketball game, right? First of all, you have the Nets, and I don't know if you felt this way. It just never, they even mentioned in the broadcast, but I felt it long before they mentioned, they couldn't get over the hump. Every time they get close, it just felt like they couldn't tie it. They couldn't take the lead over and over. They get to within 3. They get to within 2. And then they'd miss like an easy basket, right? Like they missed a couple free throws at one point. Like Jeff Green misses both free throws.
Costly turnover, right?
Right, like a turnover. And I was like, oh, they're going to be able to do this. This is so many possessions. This is the time. This is the time. This is the time. And it's not happening. And it's not happening. And it's not happening. But you get down to around 5 minutes, and then it does start to happen. So one, kudos to Steve Nash again for keeping Nick Claxton out there with the closing unit. Absolutely had to be done. He was clearly the better fit here in terms of switching. Clearly the better, the athleticism really paid off for him on the defensive end. He was bringing everything that DeAndre was basically bringing on the lob stuff on the offensive end, but then bringing a level of defense, especially being able to switch onto the guards, which the Pacers kept wanting to do, and it just wasn't really the best decision for them to keep doing. And that's just something that DeAndre can't do. So kudos to the staff for keeping him out there. Kudos to Tyler Johnson closing and Jeff Green. The closing lineup looked very different than the starting lineup, and that is not an easy thing to do sometimes when you're coaching. People don't really seem to get this sometimes, but oftentimes your starting lineup or some approximation of it is going to be what ends up closing, because that's how your rotations sort of end up going with rest and other things, right? Like, you just can't play guys tons of consecutive minutes because you get diminishing returns. So oftentimes what happens is you end up reverting back to who started, because that's where the minutes end up falling, right? Not for every guy, but often that's what happens, sometimes just by default. It didn't happen for the Nets here, because they just saw the thing that was so definitively working and they stuck with it. Claxton plays his most minutes, 23. TJ plays 31 minutes off the bench. And so I'm going on and on here because I did feel like there was a lot of these moments. I will say the moment that started the turn for me, it wasn't what got me up off the couch, but it was close, was Claxton gets locked up on TJ McConnell and gets a block on him. And then they run out, and Harden hits him on the run out, and he dunks. Mm-hmm. Like, that was one moment. They get a couple offensive rebounds, and then there's a 547 mark. Claxton D's him up again. This time, I believe, on LeVert, and they get another stop. And it was like sort of then when they started getting back downhill and going toward the win. So there was it really for me. There was a couple, like I said, a couple little moments, but for the most part, it was just this greater idea of, hey, this is the unit we're closing it with, because this is the unit that's working. And you said it too. Like, they got so aggressive and so energetic, and they were feeding off each other on defense so much that you just kind of saw, like, yeah, they can't go over the hump. But then you kind of thought, but they're gonna, right? At some point, this kind of energy is just gonna pay off, and it did.
Well, I feel like in a lot of ways, you know, it's like trying to roll that boulder up the hill. And at a certain point, they're like, you know what? Maybe I'll just grab the hill and pull it down to me. If the Pacers are the hill, yeah, we can't quite get up to it like we normally would. Perimeter shooting, all those kind of things we talk about. Instead, let's drag you down, and then we're just going to burrow through the mountain and come out the other side and roll ourselves down. Like, it really, again, the collective effort. I don't want to overstate it. You mentioned about that natural switch from Nash. So when you get to Green and Claxton, just quickly here, these guys, and the reason why I say combined is because they were excluding the 7 of 10 from the line, which was big for Green, but they combined 9 of 18 from the field. They combined for 17 rebounds. Yeah, Claxton with those couple of blocks. You mentioned, and we said this in other games, he did D up LeVert again, and there was even earlier in the game when he picked him up, he stayed with LeVert across the arc, maintained his balance, didn't overcommit. We've seen him kind of leave his feet a little bit at times, but he seems to have a great sense of balance and also awareness about how far he can reach in without impacting, touching, fouling the player. So for the most part, we've seen him play pretty clean games as well. And when you get into those 23-minute shares, you can start to think about, well, how would you stretch this out a little bit? And maybe when Blake Griffin comes in, we don't have to get into that necessarily. But it just made sense to me to make the shift. And once you did it, that extra length from those two particular players disrupted a lot of what the Pacers were trying to do offensively. And if you think about it, held them to 24, right? They outscored them 35-24 in the fourth quarter. So you saw this in the second quarter as well when those players were in there, 21 points in the second quarter. So this rotation, that was indicative of what you were capable of doing. And maybe in the third quarter, what it was about, when you see DeAndre Jordan still getting 20 minutes, or even Brown and some of those guys that were having net negatives on the court, it was about getting to this sequence, getting to the fourth quarter and understanding what works so well and then allowing it to take over for you. And then, yes, you also include the fact that you have James Harden, and he does some of those little things that I love so much. When he makes the choice that he's going to get himself into the lane and work those little floaters, even had one come up short and also had the perfect down-up rebound, laid it back in for himself. It just felt like all of that hump they couldn't get over very quickly started to turn. And then you get to the point where they're trying to foul you in those late game sequences. I ran out of steam, much like the Pacers. I ran out of steam on the way I wanted to kind of break down the end of the game. It was just another solid win for a team that didn't have to go out and win that game. And that's what I really loved about it. My only other thing, you mentioned TLC, I think Tyler Johnson. I do wonder, when Blake Griffin gets in here, is Tyler Johnson maybe the guy that ends up eating some of Bruce Brown's minutes as well, specifically at those guard roles and getting the best value from your rotations?
Yeah, and I totally agree about the grit, right? Because this was exactly all these, like, kind of, you know, you mentioned the defense, the Jeff Green piece, to be able to switch, all that stuff kind of does add up. I misspoke before because I got confused, I think, with how I was watching this. The moment that got me up off the couch, the first time was the Tyler Johnson corner three that pulled him within two. And it was the sequence at about the 5 minute mark where they have three offensive rebounds and then it's a Harden three at the top of the key that ultimately puts them up five. And that was kind of like where the game was over, I felt like, right? Like, I know it's like seven, I know it's still 7 minutes to go there, but that was a point where it was like, oh, if we're going to hustle and out hustle you and go up five and you've shown no real ability to stop what's going on here and we're going to win the hustle game, like, you don't really have any chance. And I get that it's like Tyler Johnson and Nick Claxton are closing against you, playoff bound Pacers that are full strength. Sorry. You know what I mean? But like, but this is again, like, sort of like the magic that's being developed in this team, that if they're going to be able to put these other little hustle pieces together as well, then forget it. And like we said before, like we're going to do a whole episode probably about Claxton again. The Claxton thing's just like so freaking encouraging. It's unbelievable. And I'm not sure if we're going to have, we'll save this for
stare down Sabonis, by the way, after the block that he had on him. Did that little, he just looked at, you know, he's looking down the court.
Know what's going to start happening?
Because he was staring through Sabonis' chest.
We're going to have Jared Allen 2.0 redux here, because there's going to be people that are going to start wondering why DJ's starting. Like, you keep playing like this, and we're going to have another.
Well, you know what? Let me adjust that real quick, because we've beaten up on DJ at times, whatever, and a lot of the fans went back to that again in this game. Why is he on the court? Why is he playing so much? The 12 minutes at the start of it, I get that, but he does. You see him, the way he works with Harden, he does have a functionality. He does have a role on this team. I do think, yes, you may want to switch. You see what Blake brings you. But he still has a role. I think it's just a matter of starting to identify it a little bit differently. And then you'll get excited about the value that he brings, as opposed to feeling like when you start with him, then you really start to eat him apart. And we've done it ourselves. But you start to nitpick everything that doesn't go right when he's on the court.
I want to be really clear. I'm not saying we're going to do it necessarily. It's going to start happening though. It's going to be the same conversation, and it will be, and there's going to be a situation now at this point where there's going to be some matchups where it's close. Look, we're going to talk tomorrow about the KD injury. I think we'll end up talking a little bit more of the role stuff. Maybe we'll talk about what rotations we should be seeing more as well. All in all, really exciting win for the Nets. A game that they fell down early, and all that Brooklyn grit came and bubbled up right to the surface, and really everything that you saw from basically the second quarter on, and especially the fourth quarter. The energy, everything you love to see. It was like watching a young upstart team that just also happens to have a top five player in the NBA on the court with them, and James Harden sort of leading the charge, and really just a win that really could start exemplifying what they're going to bring to the court the rest of the season. We'll be back again tomorrow talking more Brooklyn Nets basketball. In the meantime, rate and review the podcast wherever you listen. 5 stars or bust. And write a little review as well. That stuff really helps move us up the podcast charts. We saw really awesome numbers, especially from that Knicks win episode. So keep it coming. Rate and review the podcast wherever you listen.
Shout out to the fans. Thanks for joining us on Locker Room. We'll be back there next week. Had a lot of fun. You guys helped make the podcast great. So really appreciate it. We'll see you again tomorrow.
All right, we'll be back again tomorrow talking more Brooklyn Nets basketball.